Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Paul Thomas Anderson makes movies about some pretty weird guys. In films like The Master and There Will Be Blood, charismatic and self-destructive men drive themselves to, or sometimes over the brink, trying to make something amazing happen.
The Andersonian madman returns in Phantom Thread. Daniel Day-Lewis stars as Reynolds Woodcock, a dressmaker in 1950s London. He begins a relationship with a young woman played by Vicky Creeps. She's in awe of his genius and at first is thrilled to be his muse. Their relationship becomes complicated, all while he's making beautiful dresses.
Phantom Thread just racked up 6 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best Director. Daniel Day-Lewis earned an acting nomination, as did Leslie Manville, who plays his sister, Cyril.
On this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we'll talk about the film and Daniel Day-Lewis, who says he's retiring from acting. Don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from HBO's High Maintenance. Inspired by the beloved web series, the critically acclaimed show surrounds the life of The Guy, the nameless bike-riding weed dealer who helps his clients deal with whatever life delivers. Each episode features stories that bring vibrant characters, all connected by their pot salesman, to life as the show captures the experience of truly trying to cope. Stream the first season now before season 2 premieres Friday, January 19th at 11 p.m.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. You've met me and Steven. Also with us is Glenn Weldon from the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And from KJZZ in Phoenix is our desert correspondent and our noted Daniel Day-Lewis super fan, Sarah Venturi. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Linda.
We are so excited to have Sarah with us. She really wanted to do this episode because of how much she loves Daniel Day-Lewis.
So much.
We will get to her in a little bit. I'm going to start with Glenn. Mm-hmm. I want to know how you felt about Phantom Thread.
Phantom Thread. You know, there's a moment in this film early on after the character of Alma, played by Vicky Creeps, completely undoes the character played by Daniel Day-Lewis by buttering her toast too loudly, and he leaves either in a snit or a huff, depending. You pick. She's left there with Reynolds Woodcock's sister, Cyril, played by Leslie Manville. She says to her, "He's too fussy," in her Luxembourgian accent.
Uh-huh.
And at that moment, I turned to myself in the theater and I thought, oh, you said it, sister. This entire film is too fussy.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I can in good conscience sit here after coming in not once but twice on this show and fawning and drooling over The Crown and, to a lesser extent, Downton Abbey, and not admit that I ate this up with a big old pudding spoon. Because those two properties are shows in which nothing happens, and it happens very Britishly, right? Very stiff upper lippy. And that's what you have here. You have this cold, meticulous film with this weird Hitchcockian banana pants flourish midway through. And it creates this very officious, sterile, effete character in Woodcock, who lives up to his name, and then proceeds to punish him. And I think there's a power imbalance on the screen, but it's not the one the film sets up. The film sets up, of course, that the character of Reynolds Woodcock is a very powerful and influential designer. And this woman, Alma, comes along and sort of hangs on him. She is his latest muse, whatever. But the thing is, I found her as a character, and especially as an actress, blowing him off the screen. I was much more interested in her, and I found her empathetic. I found her more alive than he is. And so there was a scene where they have this argument. That's a great scene because it feels very organic. It's an argument that takes place in a film, but it doesn't feel like they're both being very eloquent and articulate and making points. They're just trying to hurt each other in a very circular, unpleasant, real way. That, again, there are lots of things to talk about this film, and I gather I like this film a little bit more, a lot more than many of you. But yeah, I dug it.
Interesting. All right, Stephen, how'd you like it?
Okay, so when we talked about the movie Mother a few months back, I talked about how it has this religious allegory, but it also, I couldn't get past feeling like I was watching Darren Aronofsky make a movie about his own mercurial genius.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the least interesting interpretation of that particular film. In this movie, it feels so much like a depiction of Paul Thomas Anderson's mercurial genius, to the point there's this through line where, as a designer, he stitches little messages, notes and stuff in the dresses he makes. Paul Thomas Anderson tucked his initials into the title of this movie. And so for me, this is a movie about fussy creative types made by a fussy creative type. Your mileage may vary about how much you appreciate the travails of troubled geniuses who must have obedient silence at all times. Because I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy him. I didn't care. And as pretty as the film was to look at, I just couldn't get past my contempt for particularly him, but basically everybody involved.
Interesting.
Phantom Thread, everybody.
So I know, spoiler alert, I already know that Sarah, although she came in as our Daniel Day-Lewis super fan, had some issues with this film. So I want to get into a little bit. Sarah, did any part of this movie, tell me where this movie kind of got on your bad side?
So I went into this movie so primed to like it. Like, I like Paul Thomas Anderson. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I felt very confident that despite the cryptic trailers and the sort of hint that it was going to be about kind of a miserable, fussy guy that also makes beautiful dresses, the thing that Daniel Day-Lewis does so well that I like really always find myself loving about him is that he takes these characters who are often pretty terrible and I believe put some amount of nuance in them where there's something like a little bit human about even his most inhumane characters, uh-huh. like Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood, for example. I found Reynolds Woodcock to be more insufferable than Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood. Like that guy, I related more to the Daniel Plainview than I did to yeah. Reynolds Woodcock.
Yeah.
5 minutes in, when I could see sort of how they were setting up that, you know, he was going to be this incredibly demanding, incredibly fussy person, I was sort of like rolling my eyes already. And then I was hoping that there would be this sort of turning point where I felt that he had some redeeming qualities or where I found him really particularly interesting as a person. And that never happened for me. And so the first half of the movie, I was feeling okay because I was like, this is going to set up to something incredible. And then I felt like it never came. And even though there is a huge plot twist in the movie, I didn't feel like that plot twist was so mind-blowingly wonderful that it made up for everything else. And I could not get behind this character. I felt that Vicky Creeps' character was perhaps, as Glenn said, more empathetic than, certainly, than Reynolds Woodcock. But you learn so little about her during the movie
yep.
that I found that kind of unforgivable. Like, you don't know anything about her backstory, why she is the way she is. And it just did not work for me.
Yeah, I think I had some of the same misgivings as Sarah. And one of them goes back to what Sarah said about Alma, the Vicky Creeps character, which is, as far as I can remember, she does not have a thought or an interest or anything in the film that is not about him. And moreover, neither does his sister,
mm-hmm.
Cyril.
Right.
They are both women who exist only as extensions of him. That is their only purpose, whereas he also has this obsession with his art and all of this. And I actually saw the film somewhere positively referred to as essentially being about, you know, this complicated man and the women who make his world turn. And it made me think, I feel like this film is perhaps the clearest example I've ever been able to offer people of a film that I might feel very differently about in a different context of what films are out there and who is getting to tell stories and what films I feel like I am seeing, right? Because I am not necessarily opposed to a story of a toxic genius. What I have problems with is every Oscar season bringing countless stories of toxic genii who are usually white dudes around whom everybody else in the film revolves. And that has not always been true of everything that Paul Thomas Anderson has ever done. I think it's true of perhaps The Master and
definitely
some of the other stuff. But it's not necessarily the story of Boogie Nights. There are more people with internal lives, and they're not all rotating around one person. But I do feel like recently, and there's a very good review in Variety by Owen Gleiberman that kind of gets at this issue, which is, why has he sort of settled into this toxic jerk cinema oeuvre, if I can say it that way? And I think there really isn't anything wrong with it. I'm just tired of it. I'm so tired of this. And if I weren't so tired of it, I would have been able to better concentrate on things like how beautiful it is to look at and how beautifully shot I think it is. And the fact that there is, you know, when Sarah talks about thinking the first half was going to go somewhere, the feeling of dread that is built in the first part of this film is really effective. I don't really think it pays off enough. But if I were looking at this film in isolation, I think I would feel differently about it than I do in the context of the world. Stephen, you're giving me a look as if you have a thought.
Well, there's a scene in this movie that I think is incredibly telling, where it's being explained to Reynolds Woodcock that someone is not buying dresses from him anymore. She's looking for something chic. Mm-hmm. And he launches into this tirade about, like, I don't care about chic. And it has this very, like, the Philistines want chic, but I will give them art. And if you're looking for why does Paul Thomas Anderson keep making movies about these kind of mercurial geniuses, that scene to me felt like it was coming directly from the mouth of a frustrated filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And that this film and that a lot of his films are more challenging and more artful. And like the theater that where I saw this movie was only showing it in 70 millimeter for $18. and they didn't send out screeners. And this is clearly how you are meant to see this film. And it has the fussiness of that character has to be. Maybe it's through any number of prisms, mm-hmm. but it has to be coming from Paul Thomas Anderson at least a little bit.
One of the things I think is so funny about this film and about the experience of it, and it made me think so much, like I said, about the context in which you process a piece of filmmaking, because it is a piece of filmmaking that is wildly self-serious, mm-hmm. right? Although I think people who like it would say, you know, there isn't an undertone of black comedy in parts of it.
Absurdism.
There is some black comedy in it. I would agree with that. But as a film, it is very, very self-serious. And yet, I sat in a theater with four dudes who, as I was saying to Glenn earlier, were watching this film very much in the way that you might stereotypically expect this same group of fellows to watch an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Uh-huh.
You know, everything that happened when Cyril would get off a really good burn, they would sort of say, ooh. And then at one point, somebody said something and they all snapped.
Yeah,
literally all snapped.
Did they snap when he said he was a confirmed bachelor?
Uh-huh.
No, but I suspect they perked up. And I will say, I think they treated it like silliness. They treated it like a certain kind of campy, if I can say campy, which is overused, but silliness.
This is why I perhaps liked it more than you guys did, because I mean that I treated this as like a like Rebecca now, just like a construction that is very, as I say, Hitchcockian in its motivating.
I think Hitchcockian is a good description.
And I was talking to Mondello about this. There is a reading of this film where he is a closeted gay man. Doesn't change. Certainly not intended. I do not feel it was intended, but that doesn't matter because intention doesn't matter. Author's dead and imagery matters. What we're presented with matters. And you can read into it. And I think those four dudes were probably reading into it. And I was certainly reading into it, but that doesn't change the film. I do not think that Reynolds Woodcock, his worldview is meant to be the right one. I think he is meant to be deeply flawed. A man who can be undone and have his entire day ruined by how loudly you are pouring tea is not somebody we're supposed to empathize with in any way.
I don't think the issue is whether you're supposed to think his worldview is the right one. I think the issue is one that Sarah and I traded notes about a little bit earlier, which is, are you ultimately seeing the romanticizing of an abusive relationship?
Right.
Because in a sense, what you're seeing is, what an abusive, impossible artist really needs is just to find a woman who kind of that's her thing,
mm-hmm.
and who kind of gets something out of being in an abusive relationship.
Two broken people who found each other.
Well, right. But at the same time, it's not, you know, only in the most forced of ways is there eventually any kind of back and forth to it. Initially, he's just very withholding and cold and awful and mean and nasty, and she tries to do kind things for him, and he rejects it, and he's terrible.
Right.
And he throws out women like trash, and he treats her like a mannequin on whom to hang a dress.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, yes, the film makes a very, I would argue, heavy-handed effort to kind of, you know, change that power balance, as you say.
Right.
But, you know, when a film starts off reading clearly emotionally abusive to me, and then it turns out, well, but she knew just how to handle him, you know, and if people who loved it were reading it as an abuse story, that would be one thing. But a lot of people who love it have read it and interpreted it as deeply romantic. And that is something that has irked
me. So upsetting.
Yeah.
So upsetting.
Yeah. What were your thoughts here like, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I think when I sort of started thinking about this interpretation that perhaps he was closeted, I kind of paused for a minute and I was like, does this make him any more of a sympathetic character? If
yeah.
he's living this closeted life and maybe this miserableness that we see is like, is him lashing out not about his art, but about so many other things, I still couldn't get past it. It was so hard for me to get past it. And he is abusive in a lot of ways. And I thought so much about, like, so much of the symbolism that they try to set up with, you know, he has this complex feelings towards his dead mother, who he loved very, very much. And even from the very opening scene, you see him sitting with his sister, Cyril, and another woman. And until you get into the movie, you can't tell that Cyril is his sister. Like, you think he might be with two girlfriends. And
yeah.
there were, like, heavy sort of incestual or at least emotionally incestual tones to it.
Yeah.
It felt abusive. And I think the people in the theater I was in, all of the things that he gets so annoyed about, the loud buttering of the toast, the how dare you cook with butter, like all of the things that he gets so upset and angry about, I think after like 10 or 15 minutes, I was just like, I can't laugh at this anymore. Like, this isn't funny. I understand what you've tried to set up with this character. He's like this miserable person who gets angry at everything. And the people in the theater that I was in continued to like sort of laugh at those parts.
Yes.
And so then I was like, am I reading this wrong? Is this supposed to be like some weird deadpan comedy that just has like a twisted love story that's a part of it? And like, I completely agree that if it hadn't come out at this exact moment in time, mm-hmm. I might have given it like more leeway, but I think it still doesn't make the character less insufferable.
Yeah.
And I'm super angry. And I think I'm angry at Paul Thomas Anderson, because I think that like, if you're gonna like pull out like the Rolls Royce that is Daniel Day-Lewis for a role like this, like give him an opportunity to make this man like a little bit humanizing. And
yeah.
I did not feel that.
Yeah, I had a lot of those sort of similar thoughts, including I know that I'm supposed to be seeing more dark comedy in this than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I would love to talk to somebody who actually found this film sincerely romantic and swoony, because there's no swooning involved in this film. Nobody is going to a fainting couch because everybody is just too dry, desiccated. And if you find projectile diarrhea romantic, then maybe this is you'll find this
family
film.
Family podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Implied not shown.
Implied not shown. But like this is how I kind of found a way to negotiate it as dark comedy, as two broken people who found each other, not to be emulated, not to be anything to aspire to, but to be pitied and just completely all in this very tufted, projected little world.
And I think it would be very unfair not to talk about just the visuals of I mean, I think as a piece of art, like a painting,
mm-hmm.
it's very, very, very beautiful. And if I had been watching the whole thing with the sound off while I did errands or something like that, I might have enjoyed it a lot more. There is some absolutely stunning imagery in it, not just the most grand sort of the big billowing dresses, although they're amazing. But also just a lot of beautiful work in corridors and staircases and work with the arrangement of rooms and with light. There is some stunning work. I will be curious, to say the least, to know what those of you who see Phantom Thread think of it. It is a film about which I think many people will have opinions.
Don't leave during the pod racing scene. Make sure you stick around.
Well, if you have thoughts about the pod racing scene or anything else about Phantom Thread, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find Sarah Ventry on Twitter at Sarahzona. That's S-A-R-A-Z-O-N-A-H. The silent H is at the end, as she always says. Thank you for being here, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back here on Friday to talk about the ABC show, The Good Doctor. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, do give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you back here on Friday.